Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Houston Open. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Hello, Greg. Or should I say, howdy, Greg.
Howdy. Yes, the Houston Open and a new spot in the schedule, which is kind of cool because, look, this is a big time golf course. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to have it in this slot of the year as players are getting ready for the Masters. So we got some really good players playing this week, getting perhaps their final tune up before Augusta National. We got a lot of guys trying to get into the field at the Masters for the first time or for this year. So there's some big things to play for this week.
I mean, let's just not waste it. Let's just jump right into it. Troy, let's, if you would share my screen, fire away. So Memorial Park is the golf course. Now, you mentioned a couple of quirks already out of the gate here. First off, this was a redesigned golf course in 2019, Tom Doak, and there has been three editions of this tournament played since the redesign and since they moved it back to Memorial Park. The 2023 version, I guess, doesn't really exist, Greg, because this used to be a fall event. It played in October or November. They did not play this in November of 2023 because it got a spot here in the calendar year schedule in a March time slot. So here we are at the end of March, which I assume is going to make things play a little bit differently. So there's like a lot of wrinkles that we've got to iron out here.
Yeah, there are quite a few. One, it definitely carries a different meaning, the event as a whole, right? It's we are right before the start of the major championship season. So that's one thing. Being in the fall, it's a nice place to get a start. A lot of guys chose it as maybe their single event of the fall when it was there, because it is a big golf course. It's a tough golf course. You look at this scorecard, yeah. And I mean, you got five par fours over 490. Right, they're long. You got three par fives, which are also long, and five par threes, which aren't all that long. But you're still talking about a 7,400 yard par 70 golf course. So it is a lot of iron shots from outside of 200 yards. I mean, last year it was a third of the iron shots were outside of 200 yards.
Yeah.
So that's a significant challenge for the players.
Yeah, it is interesting the way that the scorecard is like it's. Yeah, you look through the scorecard and you're like, wait, that's kind of interesting. Oh, that too. Oh, yeah, this is kind of weird too. So it does create this little bit of a test. Do we have any idea what the difference is between an October or a November Houston Open and a March Houston Open in relative to the golf course and how it might play?
I don't know to the degree of like firmness, like if it's going to play shorter or longer. But you do have a different green surface because they overseed. So you're going to have a surface similar to, we've had this overseed at, I think, TPC Sawgrass, the American Express. Some of these Bermuda courses early in the year, we've had this overseed, which creates a really smooth putting surface, quite frankly. And that's different than the traditional Bermuda that they played in the fall. But beyond that, I'm not expecting too many dramatic differences.
With 3 years of history and maybe subtle distances or differences, excuse me, how much weight are you putting on course history compared to other years or other events?
It's a fascinating question, Rick, because is it course history or is it course style? You know, this is very specific when you look at some of these proximity buckets, right? I mean, distance is very important, which it's important everywhere, but it's a lot more important than it was at the Valspar last week. We have Peter Malnati win. It's a lot more important than it was at the Players' Championship, and a lot more important than it was at the Cognizant Classic. So when you look at recent form, it brings some things into question, right? Just because you're playing well, now you're going to face an entirely different test coming to this golf course. And if you were struggling with some of these tricky Florida golf courses with a lot of penalties off the tee, a lot of water to negotiate, you don't really have that issue here. So I'm looking at recent form with a more of a quizzical eye. Looking at course history for sure, but it is limited. And I don't think there's enough to really go alone on course history. So I was going to ask you the same thing. Like, how much are you looking at recent form here? Do you look at these specifics? Do you look at a course comparison like the Mexico Open, for instance, or Torrey Pines or something along those lines? Because this will be a driver heavy golf course, just like those two, a long iron heavy golf course, just like those two.
Yes, I do like both of those, especially Mexico. And Mexico even has some good crossover of guys who play well at both of these places, which I think is interesting. But yeah, if a normal week, in a normal average week, I would think the importance of course history is a 5 out of 10. When we get to Augusta National, it's 9.5 out of 10. Right, because that's so sticky. This would be 2.5 out of 10. Right, I would like it, but it's only 3 years. It's a different time of year. I'm not going to, you know, maybe I'll use it to break ties, but I'm not going to like consider it as its own thing.
Yeah, and again, time of year is a big deal because a lot of the guys, not just because of the way it may or may not play different, but the players may have been taking a lot of time off leading into Houston. They may have come in really hot. Some of them, you get like more of a variance. Whereas this week, everybody's been playing a pretty healthy schedule. So you kind of come in with some real solid concrete knowledge of how guys are playing.
That's a good point.
Which too is different.
Yeah, that is different. Yeah, like you said, if it was the one event in the fall that some of these guys played, you had no idea what they've been doing for the last couple of weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we do.
Interesting. Okay. Well, listen, let's start naming names. We've got a little historic spot at the top of the board. We'll talk about that. But first, we are going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
And we're back, Greg. Let's dive into this, the cheat sheet at rickrungood.com. And there is something very noticeable at the top of the board. That is a 3. That says Scottie Scheffler, 13,000 $10,000. More on that in a second. The others over 10K. Wyndham Clark is 10,900. Sahith Theegala is 10,300. Will Zalatoris is 10,100. Greg, I'll just point this out. In my database, which goes back, you know, I've got probably 5 years of odds and salary information. We've never seen a non-tour championship $13,000 golfer. We've never seen that before. And his odds to win this, which as of right now are about plus 260, are about as short as they get for a full field non-tour championship like setup. So that is the expectation being laid on Scottie Scheffler right now.
Yeah, and it probably should be. It probably should be. You know, the biggest question in Scottie's game, the only question in Scottie's game over the past 2 years, 2.5 years, has been the putter. And he's coming off of two very solid putting weeks. He's coming into a golf course that he plays quite well. One of only two players in this field with two top tens here. One of them was a tied second, the other a tied ninth. This kind of checks all the boxes as you would expect. And you run out of things to say with Scottie Scheffler. I guess the one question would be, how's his neck holding up? Right. That would be the only question. The only thing that's holding him back from winning three tournaments in a row. I think it's very possible this week. I think the price on DraftKings, I think the odds are both well-deserved. I think they're fair and I think they're correct.
I would argue he should probably be more expensive than this on DraftKings. You know, he was $12,800 at the Players Championship, which is a better field on a more volatile golf course, and he won it. So now he is $200 more expensive in a much weaker field on a much more predictable track. And also, I don't necessarily so the way that you would kind of translate the odds to the DraftKings pricing, he is more of a favorite than his DraftKings price indicates. So long story short, I think he should probably be more expensive than this.
That's a good point. And typically you'd see it the other way, where like in order for you to win it, when it comes to the odds, you have to win the tournament.
Right.
You know, so typically you might have somebody who's a little bit longer, who's been playing really consistent or playing really well, and they may not win, but they're going to be a really highly valuable DraftKings player. Mm-hmm. But Scottie's both of those.
Yes.
You know, he has been unbelievably consistent for years.
The thing that's interesting about Scottie is, you know, even when he wasn't winning, which is a joke, he was still showing up in what would end up being the week's optimal lineup, because he was such a, you know, the second, third, fourth, you know, being the best guy in the 10K range, scoring all those fantasy points. Yes, it would help if he were to win and get the extra 10 points, but he was able to essentially be of great value even without wins. Obviously, the outright market, it cares about the actual number one next to his name. The optimal lineup does not.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. So I guess what you're saying is Scottie Scheffler is going to be chalk and you need to be a part of it.
Choo-choo all aboard. The problem for me, and listen, I think Scottie, you know, I'm not going to be missing out on this. I do like Wyndham Clark and Sahith a lot.
Sahith was my pivot. He was the other guy I wrote down. And Rick, you never get on Sahith.
Never. Well, I never get him right, and I rarely, but I've converted. I'm in.
Look at the consistency he's shown.
Yep.
I mean, this guy's becoming like a real powerhouse. It's the third most expensive player on DraftKings. And should be. He's been putting great. He has, regardless of what the stats say, he has a phenomenal short game, phenomenally imaginative, which I do think is really important around this golf course. He's got plenty of club head speed. He's been driving the ball great. He seems to check all the boxes to me.
Yes. And I think there have only ever been two knocks against Sahith. Inconsistent, which he has solved, and can get very loose with the driver. Cool. Do it here. I don't care. Like, just go get after it. I was just, you know, clicking around, Greg, messing around, and I ran. There's basically no rough out here. It's going to start the week at like an inch and a half. It's not going to be very penal. On golf courses with 2 inches of rough or shorter, Scotty 1, Sahith 2. It's not going to get him in trouble.
It's great. And he's fine playing when it's wild, especially if he's not going to get penalized for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like Sahith too. Wyndham, all the emotion that he's played with the last couple weeks, he looks so good too. And this should be a perfect golf course for him. It's got a sting. I just don't know. I get very concerned with high emotional performances like the one at the Players and what we're going to get the next week.
The concern here is we're splitting hairs, right? Like I love the big three. I think they are great. The fact that Wyndham Clark has finished runner up at both of those events that Scottie Scheffler won is nuts. It's a great accomplishment. I find Wyndham to be the riskiest of those three. You know, he missed the cut at Riv. He didn't play particularly well in Phoenix. He does, when he's on, he's the best player in the field. When he's not, it is not that high level of consistency that we see from some of these other guys. So that would be the only concern that I have about him. If that's what you're looking for, great. I mean, look at his radar chart. Like, this is about as equal of a, that's a perfect little diamond around the skill sets. I mean, he's just been phenomenal.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah. That's really strong.
He definitely has an edge on Scotty on the greens. Scotty's been a lot better on the greens himself, comparing himself to himself, but that would be the edge I'd give Wyndham Clark.
The only other guy that we didn't talk about was Will Zalatoris, who's coming off the missed cut at the Players Championship.
Yeah, and he seems to be a pretty good fit here too, right? I would have no problem with Will. I just don't like him as much as the guys above him. That's the only problem. And Will, too, he also can have a tendency of, like you mentioned with the consistency with Wyndham Clark, Will gears up for very specific events. He's almost one of the more predictable players on the PGA Tour. Like, big event, hard golf course, Will Zalatoris. This is a hard golf course, not the biggest event. Gearing up for the Masters. There's a lot of yes in here. There's a little more no than there is with Scotty, Wyndham, or Sahith. He'll probably win.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if any of these top guys win, but just for full transparency, I mean, I like them. Scotty, Sahith, Wyndham, Will. That's the
order. Yeah, I would agree with that order.
It's very close. So if you like Will more than we do, go spend your money however you want to spend your money.
Yeah. I'd add one thing to that. Sure. Scotty is well out in front of Sahith.
Yes. Pretty big gap.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind. You got to actively, for any of those other three guys to get in play, you have to actively fade Scotty Scheffler. I'm almost always fine with that. But I'm not really fine with that here.
I think it's a big four, Greg. I think it's a big four because I do think there's a pretty big drop off to the 9K range, which is Finau, Siwoo Kim, Jason Day, Alex Noren, Keith Mitchell, and Tom Hoge. It is not that these guys are not great, and it's not that they might not contend, but I think it's a clear, well, I think it's a clear one. I think it's then it's these three, and then it's everybody else.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Because when we get into the 9K range, I love the 9K range.
Wow.
If you separate it from the 10K range, Tony Finau, we've been talking about for a while.
I know.
He's now coming out of Florida. We talked about it last week a little bit. You were kind of coming on board.
I know.
I was a little worried.
Just when I got on. Yeah, that's right. You tried to temper my expectations and I should have listened.
I just don't think it was a good spot for him. I think this is a great spot for him. And like, he's losing strokes off the tee. That's not going to happen this week. I don't know how he could possibly lose strokes off the tee.
Oh, man.
So that's going to get better. I give him a, you know, okay on the poor iron play. He's gained strokes putting 3 weeks in a row. Like, Tony Finau has something coming. And I'm going to get on board this week. And unless it's a complete train wreck disaster, I'm going to get on board at the Masters too.
Yeah. There is
something coming with Tony Finau, in my opinion.
You were foreshadowing that Finau Masters thing last week. I think
this is a better spot for him than Augusta.
Yeah, this is interesting, right? He's obviously been great in Mexico. He's been great at Farmers in his career. What I find so like
one here.
Yeah, he's won here. He's actually got the best. He's even with a missed cut, he's got the most strokes gained per round of anybody who's played here three times. So what I also love is no one knows what to do with him. Look at how fast the public moves on him. Riviera, 11% ownership. Mexico, 30. Players, 11. Valspar, 20. We're all back in. Now it's going to be back down to, you know, maybe not because he's got a great history here, but no one has any idea what to do with this guy.
Yeah, it's tough to figure out, but I'm seeing the trends all pointing in the right direction. And getting out of Florida is exactly what Tony Finau needs. It's like, Si, you know, you get a little wild off the tee. Good. Go for it. It's no issue here. And I think the rest of his game is really good. So I'm looking forward to Tony in Texas.
Okay. Well, if not Tony, or even maybe with Tony, where is next in the 9K range?
All right. So I'll be clear about this. I think they're all playable. You can find a good reason on all of them. I ordered it like this. Finau, Siwoo, Mitchell, Norin, Hoagie.
Finau, Siwoo, Mitchell, Norin, Hoagie.
Just let's look at what Siwoo Kim, I guess Jason Day left out.
Yeah.
Who I'm fine with too. I guess he would be, he's probably fifth ahead of Hoagie. Probably Day, then Hoagie sixth.
Okay.
May even be fourth, but here nor there. Look at what Siwoo has been doing. I mean, this is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal stuff. He has been elite off the tee for a long time.
Very long time.
I mean, you got to go back to the Open Championship for the first time he lost strokes off the tee. And before that, you got to go back to the Masters. I mean, it's been basically a year. He's lost strokes off the tee once.
That's pretty impressive.
His iron play this year, he's only lost strokes off, approaching the green once.
And it was a tiny loss.
Tiny. 0.28. The short game can be very good. He struggled a little bit at the Genesis. So I give him a pass on that. The putting, he lost 8 strokes putted at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and finished tied 30th. He got that fixed at the Players. Gained 4.79 strokes putting. It's really impressive. I know that there's been some good results. Like, I remember him playing well in Pebble Beach and Phoenix, and I knew he played well at the Players. But looking at the stats, I was even more impressed.
Yeah, you're right. It's definitely a much better profile than I would have expected, even with some of the blow-up spots. But I mean, he lost nearly 9 strokes putting at Bay Hill and still finished T30. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. 8 strokes.
God.
So he's very live. Keith Mitchell. Yeah. Jeez. I mean, this season, he's had 3 events gaining 6 or more strokes approaching the green. Rick, one of them was the American Express, which means he did that in 2 rounds.
Right.
You know, he did it in Mexico, where he finished tied 19th. He did it again last week at the Valspar. putter's been an issue. But I don't think that this golf course has really difficult greens. And he finished tied ninth here in 2022.
Putter's been an issue and weekends have been an issue.
Weekends have been an issue too. So it does give me a little bit of pause because what's going on with the weekends? Weekend at the Players, I get it. I guess Sunday, last week, Saturday was no issue.
Saturday was awesome.
Yeah. Sunday was awful. Peter Malnati shot 81 on Sunday at the Players and won the very next week. So I'm a little perplexed with Keith Mitchell. I love what he's done with his game. I love the improvement in his iron play. I think he checks a lot of boxes, but you know, are we going to get another, we can't have a blow up. So, Alex Noren has been also very impressive, specifically the last 2 weeks, right? Tied ninth, last two starts for him, tied ninth at the Cognizant, tied 19th at the Players, a couple top 25s before that. Now I wouldn't look at this and say Alex Noren fits this golf course. Yet you look at his record here and he has a T4 last year, also a miscut. So maybe Alex Noren has something going on. Short game's been phenomenal. Maybe it's a better fit than we think for him. And Tom, go ahead.
We'll go to Hoagie, but this is interesting because this is a range that I mostly wrote off. You know, I was going to make a decision on, I was going to have to make a decision on Finau, and I thought Jason Day was kind of interesting, but this is enlightening to me as well. What Hoagie is doing, my goodness gracious.
Yeah. Again, perplexing because he's just hitting the cover off the golf ball. Like it is ridiculous, but the finishes aren't lining up. And I don't like that. I don't like that very much at all. His record isn't great here. He's right up there in all he's the best in this field from 200 to 225, third best in this field outside of 200. Yeah. That's 2023 and this year. And you look at these strokes gain numbers and he's clearly doing a lot of his work this year too.
Yes. This is okay. This is the Noren one, I think, was the most enlightening because I can like it when this isn't a good fit for you, but you find a way like the fourth last year and also go out and put a couple of good performances together recently, which is what he's done. And that is not someone that I would have really done a deeper dive into. So that this has been a very enlightening section for me.
Yeah, I'm looking at this saying, okay, I like everybody. I got some questions about everybody, but I could play. You know, if you tweeted me and said, I'm between these two 9K guys, it's like, close your eyes and click one. Cause it's really hard for me to separate. Really hard for me to separate in that range. So I went with a little ranking. Oh, Jason Day, we didn't talk about. He has a really nice record here too.
And a winner in Texas. Does that matter at all?
Winner in Texas. He has a T7 in 2020, T16 in 2022. And his play has been good enough, right? Florida wasn't great, but it was far from a disaster. Far from a disaster.
Yeah. You go to Florida, you have a couple of just okay weeks, and now you get out of there and go to a place that's probably a little bit better for you. Wow. Okay. 9K. I was ready to gloss over the 9K range. Now I'm ready to be an investor.
Yeah. The hard thing is still that Scottie Scheffler guy being at 13K.
Yeah.
So you might have to skip after all that. You might have to skip it altogether.
Yeah. That's the pickle. The 8K range though. Steven Yeager, Bo Hostler, Aaron Rye, Patrick Rogers, Billy Horschel, Doug Gim, Kurt Kitayama, and the man that's going to finish second or third to Scottie Scheffler, Jake Knapp. Now, Greg, if you've noticed, the guys that I've gotten the most wrong this year, Sahith, Tony Finau, Jake Knapp, they are making some big appearances in this show.
Yeah. You haven't gotten Jake Knapp wrong. You were on Jake Knapp before anybody else that I heard.
I'm like one for one. Or one and one. I'm like one.
And one. Yeah. You're fine with Jake Knapp.
Okay.
But this is... Mexico looked like a must. And the only reason I did a deep dive into it is because a couple of weeks before you mentioned him. And I was like, yeah, he's right. And this is an even better spot for him. He's going to a great golf course for him. The length is awesome. Short game's really important. And he's kind of proven through the Florida swing that he can chip and pitch off of all different kinds of surfaces. He'll be fine on these tight lies. Yeah, Jake Knapp is one of three playable options in the 8K range to me.
Okay. Who would be another one of those three options?
Another one would be Kurt Kitayama.
Oh, okay.
And I'm far more queasy about it. Queasy is maybe the wrong word, but this is purely a fit, right? The golf course should be a great fit for him. The short game is not what Jake Knapp's is.
It is nice to see him playing better, though. I mean, he was really in a struggle for parts of last year, and he's now only missed one cut since the Travelers. So going back to the Scottish Open. So he has started to put the game back together.
Yes, and it should be a great spot for him. Now, this one is the most expensive, but last on my list in these three, and it's Steven Yeager. Now, there's not a whole lot of storytelling in this one, but Steven Yeager's gotten longer. I find that to be very interesting here because he has a top 10 here, T9. In 2022, T35 in 2021. So with some good starts, with some added length, putter's been a little bit of a struggle. You could go and say, hey, I hope that's just a Florida thing. And maybe we get an uptick in performance from Yeager. But definitely third on my list.
Yeah, the run that he was on. And I mean, I'm not ready to say the run is over. It was really, really good. So that it reminds me a lot of the Andrew Novak. You got to give the guy make him miss another cut. You know, make him beat me one more time or screw me one more time. He has earned that opportunity.
Yeah, and look, the T3 when you know maybe that was the last time he went for him. That was in Mexico. Great course comp. Also T3 at the Farmers, another really good course comp. And the slowdown in performance comes in Florida. Right, miscut at the Cognizant, tied 44th at the API, miscut at the Players. A lot of good players can do that. You can put together that resume and play some pretty good golf. So I don't necessarily look at it as a really big loss.
I'm with you. Well, we got plenty more work to do. The sevens, the sixes, and the fives. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
IF is the most original and heartfelt movie in years.
Magic like this comes around once in a lifetime.
This Friday, experience it with your whole family.
Can we do it again?
IF, rated PG.
And we're back. Okay, Greg, top of the 7K range, Thorbjørn Olesen, Mackenzie Hughes, the middle, Akshay Bhatia, Luke List, the bottom, Mark Hubbard, Victor Perez. This could be an important range. I mean, the rest of the show could be very important, especially with the prices at the top of the board. So let's find some goodies here.
Okay, I'll start near the top with Mackenzie Hughes, who we saw perform last week. You may think, okay, not a great course fit on a distance heavy golf course, but Mackenzie Hughes, this kind of struck me. He's one of the best players in this field from 200 to 225. And he may even have, you know, I only did top 15. So he didn't pop up there, but he's like seventh in this field from 200 to 225. He pops up in the short game categories, both strokes gained around the green and scrambling. So he's kind of got the long game and the short game settled. And another one of those more challenging golf courses, a little bit of a grinder's test. I think Mackenzie Hughes fits that mold.
Look at his history, Greg, at Memorial Park alone, T7, T29, T16.
Loves the place.
Loves the place. And then, you know, I stared at this stat profile a long time this morning because I don't know what to make of Mackenzie Hughes. And I just see a guy who finds a way to get it done. Sometimes it's relying on the short game. Sometimes he hits it a little bit better. Sometimes he gains 9 strokes putting, but he's only missed one cut since the Zozo Championship. He's got 3 straight top 30s, 4 out of his last 5. I'm coming around on Mackenzie Hughes.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, if you build a lineup with all big hitters and Mackenzie Hughes is thrown in there, he's a great little changeup piece for a lineup. And I'm wondering, you think he's going to be chalky? Is he 7K chalk?
I don't know. I don't have a feel for this range as much. Maybe you get a little bit of KH Lee, who's got 3 top 10s in his, or 2 top 10s in his last 3. Maybe you get people going back to Damon, who's got, you know, back-to-back top 10s and he's playing better. But I'm not sure anybody in this range is going to be super popular.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good because I like Hughes for sure. A couple other guys I like too. I think Akshay Bhatia could see a step up in performance out of him. The play hasn't been great. Florida was tough on him, but he did finish tied 17th at the Valspar. He is long. He is a good iron player. Things could open up for him. Now that we're out of Florida.
Yeah, agreed. Florida's not, those courses are not the greatest spots for him. I did want to point out KH Lee here. So he did have one of the rounds of the day, I think on Friday or Saturday or something like that. But he had his second top 9 finish in his last 3. This to me is boom or bust, right? You might get a miscut, like 4 out of his last 6, you might get a top 10, and there's not really a whole ton of ways to see that coming. But I don't think there's a lot of guys in this range who have as much upside as KH Lee has.
No, it's a good point. It just feels like a chase.
Yeah, I don't really love this range all that much.
I don't love chasing that guy. Your boy Davis Thompson could check some boxes.
Yeah, I'm not that excited anymore.
Yeah, I get it. But look, I mean, T24 in Mexico. Yeah, miscut at Farmers. Yeah. I thought he played better there.
Yeah. What about Joel?
Joel Damon's been great.
Plays well here. Starting to figure it out. He just absolutely struck it at the Players, and then he beat that at the Valspar. He has a short game problem and specifically a putting problem. But like you said, maybe we just got to get out of Florida.
I'm much more lenient with the putt-in problem. This is an easier golf course when it comes to the putt-in. Short game itself, I do believe, will be very important. And I don't think his short game is in the doldrums, even though it doesn't look great at the Valspar. But the Valspar is totally different experience around the greens. Thick lies in the rough is totally different than the tight lies you're going to get here. So I'm fine with Damon. I'd be concerned if it was chalk.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see as the week goes on. Anybody else? I'm excited about the 6s and the 5s. Anybody else in the 7s that we need to talk about?
Yeah, one more guy I'm mildly curious about just because he just kept coming up. It's Adam Svensson.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'll tell you what I did here. I was just looking at last year and a half, top guys in driving distance, 200 to 225, outside of 200, around the green scrambling. Right. I looked in those five areas and Svensson just kept popping up. He's third from 200 to 225. He's fifth from outside of 200, which surprised me. He's fifth or sixth in scrambling. Popped up all over the place. And he did put together some good rounds at the Valspar, although it ended up being a T49. T10 at the Genesis. I'm wondering if we could see a course fit spike from Adam Svensson.
Speaking of putting problems, Adam Svensson's got a putting
problem. Yeah. Yeah, it's ugly.
The 6K range. All right. There are some options here. Just to, you know, break the seal a little bit. I mentioned him earlier. I'm in on Andrew Novak. Right? I mean,
yeah, he stepped up to the bell. Stepped up to your call.
Yes, he's earned it. He has now got four top 20s in his last five with great looking metrics. Congratulations, Andrew. Welcome aboard. I also think, so if we are going to take this course fit situation, Joseph Bramlett, Cameron Champ tend to play well at, they tend to play well at the same time, obviously because their skill sets are so close to one another. They both gave us little breadcrumbs last week, a 17th for Bramlett, a 26th for Cam Champ. They have plenty of deficiencies, but if we're going to play that Farmers, Mexico, Houston type of mold, these guys are playing decent enough golf to be excited about.
Yeah. Now, we had this conversation, I believe it was Mexico, and Bramlett was the cheaper version of Cam Champ.
Yeah.
Now it's flipped, although they're comparable. 6,600 for Bramlett, 6,400 for Cam Champ. I'm just still much more comfortable with Bramlett.
I think I am too. I don't know if his upside is as much as a guy who's won multiple times on the PGA Tour, but I also think that, I mean, Cam Champ is in some category every single week losing like four strokes.
His iron play is terrible.
It's shockingly bad.
And Bramlett's can be good.
Yes. Bramlett at least gives you a little bit of hope that he might be able to hit this green, or a little bit of hope that like he's not going to whiff one. I think it's that big of a difference.
So I feel like there's a lot more ways that Joseph Bramlett puts together a great week. Cam Champ, it's like he has to putt really well.
I think there's a lot more ways Cam Champ's week goes absolutely sideways.
Yeah, I mean, there's three ways, right?
Yeah, there's only two and a half for Bramlett.
Yeah. So I had Bramlett on my list. I did not have Champ. I can't do it.
That's fair.
All right, but there's more. Like this range has some course fit guys.
Yeah, it does.
Which I kind of like. And another one who may be a little surprising is Matty Schmidt. Matty Schmidt recently blows Cam Champ and Joseph Bramlett out of the water. And he's the longest player in this field over the last year and a half, longer than Cam Champ.
Probably also has the longest putter in this field because he's a tall guy and he uses the long putter.
Have you seen that? Yeah. Does it a little different way. Right. Oh. It's a little like he has the broomstick, but it's not up by a guy. When I was growing up, I called the broomstick a chin putter. It's really close to your chin.
Yeah.
But he has it the same style, but it's much lower. It's like upper belly.
Yeah.
Obviously not anchor, but it's been working, but working really well. I mean, he's got a T10 in Puerto Rico, T26 at the Players, T17 at the Valspar, and he's a bomber.
I like this a lot.
So I'm in on that. All right. Can you, at what point, or is there a point where you'd be willing to go early on Gary Woodland?
Yes. Unfortunately, I've been trying to go early on him for like a month.
You've passed that point.
I've been at that point since Phoenix or whatever. I've been trying to play Gary Woodland for basically all of 2024. I love the ball striking, obviously. I've been waiting for him to just kind of knock the rust off, get back into it. It has not happened. He is putting horribly. But yeah, sure. But like, I'm not going to need much of a sell here.
I mean, I just looked at some of these stats a little different way, a little more specialized this week than normal. He's right there in driving distance. He's second in the field from 200 to 225. Not far outside the top 15, outside of 200. I guess the one concern and the reason I ask rather than state is I'm worried that there's like a fatigue and focus issue with him more so than rust. And I wonder if that just limits the potential of a spike week. Could he even, if he plays great in the first two rounds, is he physically able to handle that?
Yeah, it's interesting because he really hasn't put many, even like back-to-back rounds together. That's interesting. I hadn't considered that. But the reason I saw, because I saw his history around here, and it's, you know, T9 last year, and I was like, oh, another reason to play Gary Woodland. I don't know. And even when I have seen him, because he's been in like marquee stuff, I didn't think he played all that poorly, and then just something goes wrong. And I don't know. It's been very bizarre. I've tried to be early, but maybe it is fatigue and focus. And I don't know. I haven't considered.
Just gives me a little, like, it's not a wrist injury that's healed and he's just got to get his feet under him. Seems like there's a lot more going on, which I think he can overcome. I don't know what the timeline is for that. So, but he kept popping up, and so I figured I'd ask.
Yeah, no, good one. I've already passed that line of being early on him.
All right, how about I got one more for you in the 6Ks?
Okay.
I'm actually quite interested in this one, although I don't know why he withdrew from the players. It'd be Garrick Higo.
Oh, I don't know either. Maybe we can get Mark on the case.
T16 at the Cognizant Classic, T32 in Puerto Rico, which is not great, but he's really long. He can fill it up on the greens.
Do you think, was he one of the, did he, I'm just going to wildly speculate. I do not know if this is true or not, but I think there were guys who on Friday night were going to miss the cut and had two holes to go and withdrew.
I think there were two, and I don't think he was one of them.
Okay.
I think it was Silverman, and I think it was Chan Kim.
You're sick if that's true. If you just nailed that, you're a sick man if you just nailed those two.
I think
guys.
They both needed birdie. I think.
I'm
pretty certain on Silverman. Well, Silverman was easy to remember because he they put out that social media thing on him. He had to hole a 92-yard shot, was practicing that and missed the green.
I'm an idiot. I was thinking last week the Valspar.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the players.
Sorry. Yes, the Silverman. So I have no idea why I withdrew from the players.
So I'm going to keep my ears open for that. If I hear any injury things, I'll definitely be off. I'll probably be off anyway, but I think this is a week where he's playable and there are not many.
Okay. Can I tell you something?
Yes.
So PGA Tour comms, March 15th, 2024, Garrick Higgo WD during the second round of the Players' Championship due to a wrist injury.
All right. Well, it makes it easy. He's out. Out for me.
And then I believe he cited the same thing when he withdrew from the Valspar.
So he withdrew from the Valspar before he teed off.
That's right.
Okay.
According to the internet.
Okay. Well, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
That's right. Okay. So sorry. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news there.
Yeah. All right. It makes it easier. We'll try Gary Woodland instead of Garrick Higgo.
Perfect. What could possibly go wrong? The 5K range. Eric Barnes, Hayden Springer, Martin Laird, amongst others at the top. The middle, David Skins, Jacob Bridgman, Mac Meissner. The bottom, the min-priced golfers include Raul Parreira, JB Holmes, keeps getting in these fields, Dawie Vanderwalt. What do you got? I have the golden goose in this range, but I don't know if you want me to reveal it now or after we go back and forth a little bit.
I'm curious. I wrote down two names.
Okay.
They're on a piece of paper, so I want you to reveal the golden goose.
Okay. I got to find him now. I thought he was 5,500, but now, oh, he's even cheaper than that.
Oh, okay. So it's not my guy.
He's 5,300.
Oh,
trainer. So
really?
Yeah. So last five all over the globe. Chile at the Corn Ferry, T8. Mexico, pretty good crossover, T19. I know he putted the lights out. Don't worry about that. T5 in Argentina. Okay, he missed the cut in Puerto Rico. Then fifth in Macau. That is three different tours all over the globe, four top 20 finishes in his last five. Three of them are top eights. One of the top 20s, is at the course we like for crossover reasons.
All right. Hey, you got a case for it.
I mean, it's a little flimsy, but he's $5,300.
Yeah, it's definitely flimsy.
I don't know why that made me laugh. I thought you were going to be like, yeah, he's definitely $5,300.
Yeah, but they're all flimsy down here. I mean, like Tyson Alexander.
Was that one of your guys?
Flimsy? No, he wasn't, but I see him here. He has a second place finish here.
This is where he popped up on the scene, I think.
In 2022, his only start here. Came in second place.
Yeah.
He's 5,300. He has a T16 at the Cognizant. Two missed cuts after that. Also a missed cut in Mexico, our crossover course.
Perfect.
Are you ready for my two guys?
I am.
Also flimsy. Rico Hoey.
Sure.
It's been getting better. And I took note of him. I believe it was at the Farmers because he was like leading after round one.
He was like first round leader. Then he missed the cut.
So I've been watching him because he caught my attention. You know, he went to USC. He's had a pretty good college resume. Gets out here on the PGA Tour. There's been a lot of missed cuts, but he's made his last three. T56 at the Cognizant, T32nd in Puerto Rico, T54 at the Valspar, and he's like a driving specialist. He just has some short game issues.
I've talked to guys who play with him and said he is just a masher off the tee. Just like it, like you should watch it if you get the chance, you should watch it.
Yeah, I kind of get that sense that he's impressive. So could be a good spot. Short games, it is a legitimate concern. 5,700. Okay. Also at 5,700, feels like a guy that we don't really know much about yet, but Parker Cootie, been just elite with his irons. Finishes have been so-so. T67 last week at Valspar.
What I like about Parker is he's done what we've asked of him. He's incredibly cheap. And we've asked him to make the cut. And he has done that, and sometimes a little bit better.
And the only time he missed the cut was in Puerto Rico. And we weren't even playing. We didn't ask anything of him.
yeah, it was like, no way. We're not even considering this. So, right. He has, if you have played Parker Cootie in all like the non-alternate fields, you've been pretty happy with the results.
Yeah.
Unless you're expecting a guy who's $5,900 to win, which you shouldn't be. Well, I guess Peter Malnati, but like that. Yeah. He has done what we've asked him.
So there's an elite skill set, which means there could be more. We don't know enough to say that there's a real problem or issue. At the Valspar, he really struggled with short game, but that hasn't been the case everywhere he's played. And Valspar and this event are completely different short game tests. So I think he's very playable, very safe, 5,700 play.
Do you know how the ownership percentage of Peter Malnati last week?
Zero?
Not zero, but close.
What was it?
0.4. So less than 1%, less than a half of a percent. 0.4%.
He's the Martin. He's the Martin trainer of the Valspar. The golden goose.
The golden goose. That's what we're looking for. And now we're going to have 2 weeks of it. Two straight weeks of it.
Back to back. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Congratulations, Martin Trainer.
We could do the recap pod now and just knock it out if you want.
Why don't we have Troy run the open again?
Just go right into the Martin Trainer has won the PGA Tour. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Is there anybody else, 5K range or otherwise, that needs a mention?
No.
Agreed.
Not on my list.
Completely agreed. Scottie Scheffler's implied odds, 27%. Does he win this golf tournament 27% of the time?
Yes.
Wow.
I really think so.
They played 100 times. He was going to win 27 times.
I think it might even be more. If he really played it 100 times, the number would just keep going up.
No, they forget every time. It just like Men in Black, wipe the memory, yeah. Start over
again. Yeah. Still, I don't think it matters what he remembers. Because he just... You play it 10 times, I'm not sure he wins 2.7. At 100 times, I think he wins 27. What do you think?
I mean, that's Tiger-esque.
He's not doing it for 10 years. But what he's been doing this year and last year is Tiger-esque.
That's true. That's a good point. He's not doing it for 10 years. We're asking him to do it for 4 days.
And it's what he's been. He has been Tiger-esque.
I'm going to be very brave here and say he does not win this golf tournament.
All right.
How very brave of me to pick the guy, the 75% side.
Yeah. I think he wins. I hope he does. The neck would be the big caveat to me.
Is he playing the Texas Open?
I don't know.
I would love nothing more than to go to the Masters with a guy who's won either three or like four in a row.
You'd have Scottie Scheffler. You'd have everybody else at the, like all these other PGA Tour guys have been struggling, or there's a big question about them. Like Xander is not struggling. He's been performing very good, but there's big questions about him. Rory has been struggling and there's big questions. JT and Spieth, big questions. Cantlay, where has he been this year?
Oh, by the way, John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, and like, where the hell is their game?
Right. Where are they? And then there's Scotty coming in with three straight wins or four.
I think it would be amazing theater if he wins. Let's assume he doesn't play next week, because that feels like a lot for him to. He would have played Bay Hill, Players. That'd be like, what, five out of 6 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he's not playing next week. To win three in a row would be, I would love nothing more.
I think you're going to get that.
Hope I do. That'd be sick. All right, Greg. A lot of fun, bud. Scheduled for this week, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, normal week for us and the Houston Open with the round-by-round recaps, mega preview pod on Tuesday. Get your one-and-done selections in. For now, big thanks, producer Troy, who does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, Greg Ducharme. You can find him on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.